Good day, everyone. This is Marge Twisdale, producer and host of Prose, Poetry, and Purpose, your weekly opportunity to listen in as my guest authors go deeper into the backstory of their literary work. And we will have a specific focus on how they hope to inspire positive change in the world, one reader at a time. If you have to leave the show early, don't worry. All of my shows are available on demand at www.voiceofvashon.org. And now, let me welcome this show's guest author, Islander Marilyn Cochran Mosley. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, March. I'm enjoying being here, I guess.
Oh, now you got to let those nerves go. You're a natural at this. Okie doke. So we met at the local Vor Lit booth, which started last year and can be found every Saturday at the Saturday Farmers Market. And I'm really glad that we met and that I was able to see what you are doing and that you're able to take the time to talk with me today about your new book. Thank you for coming by.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, I'm looking forward. This is going to be great. Okay, so first things first. I am 42 years old, and I've never known how to properly pronounce Dotson. I mean, just, oh my goodness. So this is my chance to learn the proper pronunciation of that word before I spend the entire interview saying it wrong. So teach me.
Well, I don't go into the German pronunciation. I just call them dachshunds. And a lot of people, for simplicity, like to call them wiener dogs, but that bothers me. I prefer to call them dachshunds.
Okay, so, but you're not saying Dotson like a D-O-T.
No.
There's another sound in there.
It's dachshund. It just kind of rolls right off your tongue.
Okay. Warning to everyone listening now. I'm going to say this wrong the entire show. Dachshund.
That sounds pretty good.
Is it sort of like an X?
Yeah, that's sort of. Dachshund. That's pretty good.
Okay. I'll try. I mean, I normally do language really well, but German is not really something I'm super good at. And it is German, isn't it?
It is German, yeah.
Right.
Dachs meaning badger dog.
Oh, right.
But it's the dachs is the badger and the hund is the dog.
Really? Badger dog?
Dog.
Oh, that's really cool.
They were, originally trained to go underground after badgers. And badgers are pretty nasty animals, I guess, particularly when they're being confronted down under the ground.
So that's why it was valuable for them to be short-legged and long because they were going through tunnels.
Exactly.
Very excellent. Okay. Yeah, and I think you mentioned something about that in your book because I caught a bit of that, but I hadn't heard the full story.
Yeah, I usually introduce it with that because a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, I didn't. Badger dog. Wow. Okay, so my understanding is that you've been working with and writing about, here we go, dachshunds.
Okay. Very good.
Yay. For quite a while. I mean, like, quite a while. So, how about you go ahead and tell us how you got started, as in, what was the inciting incident in your life that caused your story to shift so that dachshunds came into it in such a huge way?
Well, I was always a big dog person. I love big dogs, collies, and I've had Griffin Pointer mixes most recently, and I've had Golden Retrievers and Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got married in the mid-1970s, the man I married was nutty about dachshunds. I mean, we would be walking down the street, and he would go wild if he would see one.
Aww.
And I thought, well, all right. And his, I thought about this and thought about it. And his birthday was on Christmas Day. So I thought, well, okay. So I went out and bought him one for his birthday and one for Christmas. And I came home with him. And he says, you're out of your mind. And I said, yes, I probably am. But here you are. Happy birthday and Merry Christmas. And so happened, I had a lab mix at the time as well, but what happened, I fell in love with the breed. In fact, I really, really went overboard. I really decided that these were really neat little dogs that I love very much. Of course, they multiplied.
Yeah.
And that's what
that's
led.
That's an understatement, I think, Marilyn.
Well, the first batch, we actually did sell four of them, and then we went to Alaska with the other two. And the male dog was very tragically killed up there on a 4th of July. He caught himself in the fence on his collar and choked himself to death.
Right.
And so we kept the two remaining pups.
Right.
And that's what those three of them then
right.
became my best buddies.
Right. And from there, obviously. Now, what year was this?
Well, it was in the late 1970s, and in
fact,
it's
pretty soon after the wedding.
It was the wedding was 1975, but yeah, we got the dogs. I had him for a good couple of years, and then we took a trip to Alaska. Now you're going to get into a story. We took a trip to Alaska for me to complete the research on my dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
And my late husband was a pilot, and I wanted to include him in the research. So mm-hmm. we took the plane and flew over 13,000 miles into all the little villages and so forth mm-hmm. in Alaska. And we had the three dachshunds with us.
Oh, of course, because they'll fit in a plane.
And that's right. And so out of it, I would write stories on postcards back to my office to say how I was progressing on my dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 weeks later, it came back, and I went ahead, you know, got my doctorate degree, finished it, and I was so glad to be done with professors telling me when I could cross T's and dot I's
right.
that I decided to take all those postcards and write this silly, silly book about the dachshunds traveling with us and camping out with us.
Right, right, right.
And that's how it all started.
Well, that's quite the inciting incident.
It is, it is.
So, let's see. That was in the late 70s. And now we are headed towards, goodness gracious, so 80, 90, my goodness, about 30-some-odd years you have had, dachshunds in your life, and you have been writing about them. So we're going to come back to discuss all of your writing in a minute, because first, now that we know what got you started, what I want to talk about is the fact that one of the things you've done is work with rescue groups. You told me you went down to Texas?
Yes. The rescue actually didn't come about until after my husband passed away, and I decided to get back into writing
mm-hmm.
Late 90s, beginning around 2000, I think. And that was the first book that I wrote on rescue.
Mm-hmm.
But the previous three books were out of the just about my dogs. They were about stories traveling in Alaska
mm-hmm.
or up to Alaska
right.
or going down the Yukon River in a 17-foot canoe with seven dachshunds.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, and I feel like it's a little overwhelming for me to make sure that the needs of my Boston Terrier are met. And yes, okay. So when it comes to animal rescue organizations, I think most of my listeners are sort of aware that there seem to be two different groups, one of which I think a lot of us understand, like those that care for racehorses, pit bulls, greyhounds, animals that are unfortunately caught up in racing or gambling systems, which is basically all of those are about humans making money, you know, cockfighting,
right.
whatever.
That's
it's
right.
all about humans making money. And then as soon as the you know, the horse isn't a winner, you know, can't be a stud. The greyhound tires out, and they're usually just killed. So we understand that those rescue organizations are focused on saving animals from these awful conditions. But then we have, like, the groups you've worked with, and I've seen others where they seem to be breed-specific, but it's not a breed that's actually mixed up in some human money-making scheme. And so do people who do dachshund rescue simply adore and love dachshunds? Or is there something going on that I'm unaware of that, that creates a need for this to exist, this rescue organization to be out there?
Well, there's a number of reasons that dachshunds need to be rescued. Uh-huh. And it's not just dachshunds, it's all breeds of dogs. Right. I happen to be focused on these dachshunds. Yes. When people, there are a lot of people that are breeding them, they're puppy millers. That they want to breed them to sell them. And a lot of them are, and it's all breeds.
Right.
And they will breed them, and they don't really care about the health of the dog. They don't, they're just absolutely deplorable conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that I discourage people from buying pets in pet stores, because these right. pets are shipped from puppy millers that are making money. And it ends up causing a lot of families that have got this cute little dog
mm-hmm.
just heartache, because they've not been formed right when they were
right.
During
sometimes
the,
they're not even bred well.
They're not
so
bred
they end
well
up
at all.
Breed
That's
problem.
Right.
Oh, so it's still a money scheme.
It's still a money scheme, but then there are other reasons why rescue workers are involved. I mean, someone has a dachshund and it's their love of their life, and they die
mm-hmm.
and their kids don't want to keep them right. or whatever, and they'll just dump them. Or someone has them for I just ran across one yesterday on the internet. It was a pair of dachshunds down in Texas that had been dumped at the local shelter. They were a bonded pair, and they were desperately trying to find a home for them.
Right.
I don't know the reason why, but they were 10 years old, mm-hmm. and people apparently got tired of them and maybe wanted to, you know, a lot of times they want to get puppies, get some
right.
younger dog or whatever, or the older ones maybe have some health issues.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I recently, what happened is I was at my girlfriend's house, and there's another house near hers, and on the other side of the fence are these two pit bull breeds, and she's never had any problems with them or their owners, and there's this man sitting out there very, very quietly, exactly the way a man should be interacting with two dogs, that quiet manner of allowing them to sort of come to you and interact a little bit on their own terms, but anyways, all I know is I'm watching this and I'm like, the guy knows what he's doing. He's phenomenal. And turns out this is what he does. He's like, you know, local dog whisperer type of thing. And these people were out of town and had hired him to come and spend time every day with their dogs. And he mentioned in our conversation a person who had recently contacted him. They had a 10-year-old Great Dane or something that was having typical health issues. And they said, well, we can't afford to take care of the health issues, so we just want to give this dog away to someone else. And I'm like, you know, if you can't handle the health issues of a Great Dane at that age, you put it down. You don't hand it off to someone else so it can go through the loss of its family and then within 6 months probably die anyways. I mean, Great Danes barely make it past 8 or 9.
Well, this is the way I feel about my dachshund family. They right. are family. And there's no way in the world that I could get rid of them or just give them up just because they got old.
Yeah.
And I don't understand, you know, you don't give children away, or at least most of us don't.
Yeah. Well, and if they're young and they have a medical issue and urine trauma, that makes sense. I think it was the fact that this animal had reached the end of its expected life. I mean, you know, Great Danes at 10 are, they're just on the very edge. And they spent their whole life with this family. This family was their whole life.
That's right.
And to put them through the emotional trauma, because probably they didn't want to go through the grief of actually putting their animal down. They were trying to protect themselves,
and not the dog.
The dog have to pay the cost instead of themselves.
That's right.
I don't know. For me, it didn't work. I was not happy.
Well, dachshunds now, the oldest dachshund that I'm aware of, and he passed away, I guess, about a year ago, was 23 years old.
Wow.
And he belonged to a woman in Rhode Island. I wrote about him in my last dachshund book that I wrote about his story. And he had been a rescue when he was 10 or 11 years old, as I recall. And she kept him. She and her husband kept him. And oh my, he was babied like you wouldn't believe by the time he was 23. And he's quite a cantankerous old man.
Oh my goodness gracious.
But he lived until 23 years of age. And smaller dogs, I think, do tend to live longer than your larger dogs.
Yeah.
And so it's when you get this cute little puppy and so forth, it's a big commitment. It is. And that's, you know, a lot of people don't look at it that way.
Yeah, first thing I think of whenever I have any animal come into my life is, how long are they going to live, and can I commit to providing them with the highest quality life for that period of time? And unless the answer to that question is yes, I don't get the animal.
That's absolutely right. Right now, I think I have too many of them, but there's no way in the world that I would get rid of any one of them.
Right. And you're not breeding them at this point?
No. Yeah. I'm embarrassed about the first litter that I had of dachshunds way back in the 70s. I thought, well, I wanted to have puppies, and we found good homes. I know we found good homes for three of the four pups that went. I never learned what happened to the fourth. She went to a home, but I worry about that little dog even today.
Mm.
But the other three I kept in contact. I still get Christmas cards from one of the people that got one of the dachshunds. And then, of course, the other two, the two males that we had that we kept, I kept them right until the very end. And then I had one more breeding with the mama dog, and we ended up keeping all five of the boys, and that provided another book.
Oh yeah, yeah. Another book and many excuses for going on long walks, I imagine.
Well, it is, except now I'm getting to the point where I'm not able to walk as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But those five boys, they were part of the group, and their mother and then one of the older brothers that they had were the seven that went down the Yukon River in a canoe, and that was a 200-mile trip.
Oh my! Well, okay, right, and small. You know, it's my first dog, Tiny. First dog I ever had, because growing up we always lived in rentals that would never let us have dogs. So as a child, I never got a dog. But Tiny, I got her when she was a year and a half old, and I was 18, and she was about 6.5 pounds and full grown.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my gosh, that little girl! I mean, she was with us for the whole family cried buckets when she finally passed. I mean, we like lit candles around her gravesite for a month and a half. I mean, I'd stand there and look out the window at night and just bawl. So she's definitely my first child in a way. And she went everywhere. So I could put her in my little backpack and leave a little hole open so she could stick her head out. And I would go on 35-mile bike rides with, you know, my first boyfriend, Joe, in Sacramento, California. And she would just hang out the whole time. And, you know, we had to make sure the hawks didn't eat her if we let her out on the shores of the river. But, I mean, small dogs, I do find it's really fabulous, their portability. I don't think you could have gotten seven Great Danes in the canoe.
No.
Necessarily. So, yeah. But, okay, I have another question here. But first, for those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to Prose, Poetry, and Purpose on 101.9 FM. My name is March Twisdale, and my guest author this month is Marilyn Cochran Mosley. And we are not just talking about one book you've written, nor your second or your third. You've got a whole slew of them. How about you tell us about your other works?
Okay. Well, I've got actually 9 books on dachshunds.
Right.
The first 3 were basically stories of my own dachshunds. Then I didn't write for a while. And then when I came back, the next 5 books were included stories about my dachshunds, but by that time I'd become very interested in rescue.
Right.
And so I focused, and I thought it was a good educational way to teach people about the need for rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last book that I did is I went back to just writing about my own dogs, and I have several rescue as well as not. And just their annex here on the island.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all focused. All of the dogs that are mentioned in here were dachshunds that are currently or were very recently here with me as part of my family on the island. So that's why I call it Island Dachshund Tales.
Right, right. And of course, it's spelled T-A-I-L-S.
That's right.
Tales. Okay. And then you have a non-dachshund-related book, which is, I believe, a memoir?
Yes, it's Adoption in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
So during the, in fact, 1986 to 87, that there is a 2-month period there, I went down to Peru for 2 months, adopted 2 kids, brother, natural brother and sister, and the book is about the 2 months that I spent in Peru going through all of the red tape and stuff with getting those kids.
Right.
And I did it initially as kind of something so they would have a sense of their own history and how
right.
we came about. And, of course, they're in their late 30s, and my son just turned 40 here a month ago. And that was the primary reason for doing that. Then I also, way back when, did Alaskan fairy tales for children. And it's the fairies that go between Alaska and down here.
The fairies, as in that
F-E-R, in the boat.
Like, what does it take, like 5 days or something to get up there?
Oh, it depends on where you're going. But, actually, I think you can get all the way up to the one on the Inside Passage. Probably, it's only about maybe 2.5 days.
About 15 years ago, so a girlfriend of mine who actually grew up in a little non-electric, remote cabin in Alaska was telling me about, because instead of the ships or, cruise ships and all that, that there was these fairies, and on the top level, people would, like, bring their sleeping gear and set up their little tents
I've done that.
Okay, so, all right, everyone, listen carefully, because I think this is, like, so awesome. Tell us how this works and a little bit about it, because I totally think most people are unaware of this.
Of course, that's not in the book, but the time that I did that, and I assume you can still do it, but you would take your sleeping bag. Some people did actually take portable tents, and at night, the ferry would, continue on up, and you'd go upstairs, and you'd camp out. And a lot of times, it's just that's the way you did it.
Right.
And of course,
So there's no cabins.
No.
No rooms. This is literally like the ferries we're used to.
Well, no, there are cabins there, but they really fill up, particularly in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
I have gone up there one time on the ferry, staying in a cabin as well. But that was not in the main tourist season or the summertime.
So is it passenger only, or do you have your cars on them?
No, you can have your cars on it.
So that's what makes it a ferry rather than a ship. Is that it's literally like the ferries we're used to.
That's right, except they're much bigger, and of course you can you can get cabins. And I did take, in fact, one of the books, I think the Dachshund Tales up the Inside Passage, most of it was going by our own boat up to Alaska. But there is a story in there about my dachshunds getting loose on the ferry, deck, and that was lots of fun.
Oh, my goodness. Right, so dogs are allowed, but apparently they're supposed to be, on leash or in the car?
Well, they had to be in the car, basically.
Where do they go poop over 5 days?
Well, that's that's, you know, you take them out whenever the ferries will stop at some of the places.
So the ferries do stop, and they literally stop long enough you can get off, wander around, and get back on?
Yes, yes.
Oh, like several times a day?
Depends on where, yeah, there
what
is.
What segment of the trip you're on.
Yeah, and there are, but the ferries, there's ferries that are up out of, not out of Anchorage, but out of, you know, in that southeast of there.
Mm-hmm.
And they go down, there's one that goes down all through the Aleutians and so forth. I've never been on those.
But you can get on them in Seattle?
I think it's in Bellingham.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the one that just goes up to Haines and mm-hmm. Juneau. Skagway is the end thing.
But it's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right, everybody. So when you're looking for a trip and you're thinking, oh, those cruise prices are so high, not to mention that Enterovirus loves to live on cruise ships and you never know if you're going to get sick or not, I'm going to recommend you also check out your option to take a ferry up there, because I have heard many good things. I've never heard a bad story about this.
Well, the other thing is that the book that I wrote, I was basically the senior editor on it, and because I worked up in Alaska and traveled all over in the school system,
mm-hmm.
I had kind of a contest for kids to submit their own stories about the ferries or their artwork,
right.
or their poetry or whatever. And then we went through and chose it and put
nice.
A book together. And the kids that had anything that was chosen then got a copy of the book.
Of course. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's great.
So that was the other book that I've done besides the adoption in Peru.
Very cool. Very cool. It's sort of like a collection. Oh, I love that. Okay. So apparently, I'm going to zoom up here. If all of you are sitting around thinking, my goodness gracious, March, give us contact information. We need to look this woman up. I'm going to do that for you. Marilyn has a website. It is www.cochranmosley.net. You can, of course, always go to my program tab at Voice of Vashon under the on-demand section, and the information will be there for my current author as well. Now, Marilyn also has email, and she's comfortable giving that out because some people may have questions about dachshunds or they want to know more about what's going on. She's happy to take your emails. That is mjcmosley, M-O-S-L-E-Y, 3838@hotmail.com. And even a phone call, if you're in a desperate moment or you have some great idea and you prefer phone, 206-463-4751. This is how you can get a hold of Marilyn if all these juicy ideas are just totally exciting for you. But now what I want to dive into here is you, of course, already had dogs and clearly have an awareness of the necessary devotion that humans owe to their canine companions. So when you surprised your husband on Christmas Day with two puppies, you pretty much knew what you were doing. Obviously, you're going to handle it well. But I think most of us are very aware, and there's lots of advertising campaigns put out by the Humane Society and whatnot about, please don't get a bunny rabbit for your child on Easter, or of course the typical puppy at Christmas, probably not a good idea.
That's right.
Okay. So dachshunds have particular characteristics that are specific to their breed. For someone who, like your husband, gets really excited every time someone walks by with a dachshund, what do they need to know before they decide, this is the right dog for my family? What do these types of dogs, personality aside, because they all have a different personality, but just breed specific, what do they need from their human owners?
Well, they're very, very stubborn.
Good to know.
And I think they really do bond very much with their family. A lot of them bark, and sometimes people get very upset with them and will start abusing them. And that's what happens a lot of time. But I think it's important for a person that's going to go out and get a a specific breed that they do a reading, do a lot of reading about what the personalities are of that animal, and will it fit in within their own home situation.
Right. And for apparently up to 23 years.
Well, that's unusual.
Unusual.
But I've now, the last, I had one that I lost here a couple of years ago. I had adopted him when he was about 12 years old because his owners had passed away.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of mine called me from Arizona. And so we shipped Cappy up here. But unfortunately, he was with the daughter of the person that had passed away for about 2 months. And he didn't understand why he couldn't go in the house for those 2 months. And he didn't understand why he wasn't getting all the love. And I think he really started developing dementia at that point. But anyway, he lived until he was almost 18 years old, and I got him up here, and of course he became one of the family. And that was, you know, but up until that time, because the woman that called me was a very close friend of the woman that had passed away, and so she knew this dog. But it's getting to the point where if you really take good care, if you they get regular vet visits, you can expect them 14, 15, 16 years, 17 years is probably getting to be pretty common.
Right.
But they're
not chasing badgers anymore.
And they're not chasing badgers anymore.
Now, one of your stories, I don't think this is the actual title, but the first line or something runs along the lines of never have two alpha females in the same house. Never. And this, I believe, is a personal experience of yours?
Well, I have two alpha females in the house now, and there's a couple of stories in there about the two. But I got them Kylie is, I've had her since she was a puppy.
She's on the back of your book, isn't she?
She's the one that I'm holding on the back of my book.
Right.
Yeah, she's been the author for a lot of the stories of the last several books. She has also traveled with me extensively all over the United States. Roxy had been a dachshund that belonged to a very close friend of mine who breeds and shows show dogs. And Roxy was a champion and retired. She had had two batches of puppies, and my friend does not, she will have maybe two batches, and it's mainly she's looking for show dogs and to place with in show homes. And Roxy likes to bark, and she asked me, I told her one day, because Roxy was also beating up on a couple of her other dogs in her home. I said, well, if you ever want to get rid of Roxy, you know, give me a call. I'll be glad to take her. Well, the phone was almost ringing before I hardly had said that.
Oh, no.
So Roxy is now with me, but Roxy and Kylie, it was okay for the first several months.
Right. And then after three months, she realizes Roxy isn't leaving.
She's leaving. Yeah. She's not going to go home. But then I also... that also applies to other breeds. And I'm thinking of my last two big dogs were Griffin Pointer mixes. And I did rescue those two. They were sisters from the Aleutian Islands. And I worked for about 20 years back. I commuted back and forth between here and Alaska. And one time I was in one of the villages, and one of the teachers had this batch of puppies. She had to get rid of them by the weekend. And I said, sure, I'll take two of them, thinking, Marilyn, you're out of your mind.
Did you ask your husband, or did you just
surprise
them?
He was dead then by then. He died in 1995. So I had brought those two home.
It's always funny, the surprise dogs. That happened to my husband with our Boston Terrier. It was a fabulous opportunity that had a very narrow window. And so my younger son and I decided to go for it. And then on the way, you know, my husband gets the phone call. So, honey, you know, I just want to let you know. He's like, what? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, Bob very much liked animals. Mm-hmm. And he was, I could have, you know, I mean, you know, he was the one that made the decision that we were going to keep all of the five puppies from Aww. The second batch.
Well, that brings me, okay, so yes, let's jump back to this specific book right now.
Island Dachshund Tales.
Right. I thought, oh no, wait, Vashon's not either right. Island Dachshund Tales. And okay, so the cover of this book, people, seriously, it's amazing. I actually thought it was a photograph. And after a while, I saw on the inside cover that there was an illustrator. I went, wait a minute, illustrator. I flip back to the front cover and I'm searching. I'm looking at this picture. And sure enough, I was eventually able to realize I was looking at a painting. And so I did some digging that the name of your illustrator is Sue Ellen Ross. And Sue Ellen is spelled really awesome. I love it. It's like you would expect, S-U-E, and then E-L-L-E-N, but it's all one word, and the E of Ellen is not capitalized. So it looks sort of like from another language, almost Sue Ellen Ross. And I was amazed. Turns out, after I did some digging, she has been doing her artwork for years, decades. Trailside Galleries of Jackson, Wyoming, and Scottsdale, Arizona. On their website, it says that the Leyaki Woodson Art Museum has just purchased Ross's painting titled Vantage Point for their permanent collection, and they're very excited. This sounds like a really big deal, but the picture Vantage Point is this bird, like a crane type of bird that's crawling down a branch, and you would think it's a photograph. Oh, my goodness. Tell us about Sue Ellen. Amazing work.
Well, she is. She's an amazing artist. And I met her at the time that I was doing my second book. And at that point, she did all of the pen and ink sketches, as well as the cover for mm-hmm. the book. And then the third book, she also did the pen and ink sketches and the cover. And then from then on, I mean, I didn't do books after that until the late 1990s. And she has done the cover artwork of every single one of my books.
Right.
But she's very close to retiring, and I had to talk like crazy to get her to do this last painting.
Well, I'm glad she did. I mean, the book is worth having just for the fact that it's got this glorious piece of artwork on the front of it, not to mention the rest of it.
I would agree with that. I'm very, very excited about the artwork. She would use, I love photography, and I would take pictures, but this particular picture that I gave her had a coffee cup sitting on one of the rocks and a couple of flower pots and so forth.
And she got rid of those.
Oh, she got rid of those.
Right. Well, it's awesome. So everyone, seriously, I would recommend Googling Sue Ellen Ross. I guess she does sometimes show in the Seattle area, maybe even on the island. I don't know.
No, she's been to my house, I think, only one time.
Where does she live?
She lives over in West Seattle.
Oh, okay.
And she has, and I'm not even sure where her work can be seen at this point other mm-hmm. than, you know, on the internet.
I Googled her name and just...
Her name,
you know,
keeps coming
reams
up.
And yeah, reams yeah. of stuff came up, as well as various places where you can not only see it, but also actually find something to take home with you if you want something.
That's right.
Yeah. And she's very prolific.
Yes, she is. She told me once way back when that I asked her about how her artwork developed. She said, well, when she was a kid, she used to draw maybe 100 horses a week. You know, and she just, and some of her birds that she's done, the herons and mm-hmm. so forth, they're just absolutely fantastic.
Well, I know a young woman, old girl, young woman, teenager, on the island, and I won't mention her name because I don't have her permission to do so, but she is doing something somewhat similar. I think she's probably a freshman, right now. And people are sending her photos of their horses, and now it's expanded a little bit into some of their other favorite pets. And she does sketches of, and it's just, and at this point, she's so good that people are like, please do this, you know, beautiful sketch of my, you know, animal that I can put up on the wall, and they're paying her. And so sort of a similar, I actually will be Facebooking her later and mentioning that she check out Sue Ellen's work, because she's doing a similar thing.
Well, Sue Ellen uses a media of, she said, watercolor, colored pencils, and India ink on this, and that's what she's, but her all of her work, and I've got quite a, I've have a lot of her prints, and I have a number of her original works as well.
Right.
And I'm sorry I didn't purchase all of the pen and ink sketches way back when. I've got most of them, but I don't have all of them.
No.
But her work is just phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Alrighty. So now, while your book is a collection of shorts, you know, is a good way to put it, it's not so much flash fiction, and they're not even necessarily really a short story. They almost seem to be like an excerpt from the life of the dog.
That's right.
And in, so in a way, for most of my listeners may be familiar with the book Watership Down, which is a fictional novel that's written from the perspective of rabbits.
I think that that's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it is. And it's just, wow, man, I need to hand that book to my youngest son and get him reading it, because it's so amazing. So you've written from the perspective of the dogs, not the humans. And I'm wondering what inspired you to actually take that tact? Because that's a specific writing construct that you chose. Was there like a moment where for some reason that just came to you as an idea?
It just kind of came to me, yeah. And I, all of my books, all of the dachshund books are all written from the dog's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was just tired of people saying, well, you couldn't do that.
Really? People said that?
Back then, when I came out with the very first one, they said, oh, no, you, one should always have humans. You know, you can't have talking animals and stuff. Well, my dogs don't really talk. I mean, they think.
Yeah.
And I tell people that, well, they sit down there and by my computer and direct me what I should type in.
Mm-hmm.
But the stories are pretty much just developed from their, you know, they're just excerpts of their everyday life.
Right.
And of course, I have done a lot of traveling and with them. And so that makes for a lot of interesting.
Yeah. If they just sat around tied up on some, you know, line in a backyard all the time, it might not be the most interesting collection of memories. But your dogs have had, I mean, I was flipping through them. It's like, they're all over the place, you know, all sorts of things.
Yes, they have been.
We're always so human-centric, which, of course, fine, it makes sense. But still, I think we need to be smart enough as humans to look outside of our own perspective, whether we're dealing with another human and we're trying to understand how they're seeing us or what they're needing or how they view the world, or looking through the eyes of another animal.
That's right. And I, after the fourth, usually there are all sorts of animals that are traumatized, that are away from their owners. And I know the vets, hours get filled up real quickly because they've been hurt, or there's a lot of problems the day after the fourth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. My third dog. So first I had Tiny, and then Tiny passed, and about 2 years later, Angel landed in our lap, which was great. And then we got Demon, and my boys were still doing gymnastics in Auburn at that time. It was the 5th of July. And we were headed, because, you know, you do, when you're in competitive gymnastics, it's all year round. And you don't really, you get like 2 weeks off. That's it. And it was the 5th of July. And we were headed to gymnastics. And the boys were dropped off around 8 in the morning. And I went out, and there's this dog running around. Now, I actually believe she was dumped. The appearance they had was it's this huge intersection, and this car comes racing down the road out of the suburban sort of area, racing towards this big, giant intersection near this huge mall, turns a corner and zooms away, and right behind this car comes my dog, Demon, racing down the road, chasing the car.
Yeah.
And she wasn't barking at the car. She was just trying to keep up. So, and she had a brand new collar that had obviously just been purchased at a store with no tags on it.
That's...
It was almost, and what I heard was that Auburn is a really high rate dumping ground for dogs. That a lot of people from more poor areas will just go to Auburn, dump the dog and leave, and hope that someone nice will rescue the dog.
That's right. And that happens all the time.
But it was actually still was the 5th of July
when that happened. Yeah.
And I would walk around that neighborhood when the kids were doing gymnastics. I don't want to just sit around for 4.5 hours. So I'd go walking, and it's like right after the holiday, all these little signs would pop up in this neighborhood of this dog's missing or that cat's missing or whatever.
That's right.
You know, it's the post-holiday look for my pet experience. All righty. Well, thank you so much, Marilyn, for talking with me about your newest book, Island Dachshund Tales. Island Dachshund Tales. There, I said it right. And all of your other books, your experiences. And as a reminder for my listeners, I believe you can often be found as the new farmers market season starts. Will you be at the local 4 Lit booth very often this year?
I will be there at least. Yeah, I
was
there.
Once or twice a month, maybe?
Probably once or twice a month, probably around the beginning or the ending of the month. I'm planning on being there this next weekend. And I was there last weekend. And,
excellent. How was the opening weekend?
I wasn't there on the opening weekend.
Oh,
I was, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I
that
understand
was just yesterday.
Yesterday was, it was cold and windy.
Mm.
And it wasn't really conducive to looking at books.
Well, yes. Pick and choose the dates, right?
That's right.
And of course, we cover that you have a website. So everyone who's just tuning in right now, you are listening to me say goodbye to Marilyn Cochran Mosley. You can catch my show at www.voiceofvashon.org. Just go to the On Demand tab, or you can come back next weekend, or you can catch me the next time the show plays on 101.9 FM KVSH. And as I mentioned earlier, you do have a website, which is www.cochranmosley.net. That's CochranMosley. And gosh golly, Marilyn, thanks for coming.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, this was great.
Okay.
And now, as we approach the end of the show, it's time for another flash fiction vignette from my Vashon After the Change series. Bzz, bzz, bzz. The heaviness of the late summer air left my clothes hanging lifeless against limbs I could no longer lift as childish squeals matched the torpid sound of flies swarming. The windless air full with them, clouds of black bodies intruding and retreating, driven by hunger toward rack upon rack of shredded flesh. The bride is lucky. Hers is one of the only intact families on the island. Three of her youngest cousins, also lucky, dash to and fro, waving leafy branches at the marauding invaders, devoted to the impossible task of maggot watch. I never went to a wedding before the change. My parents' friends had all been comfortably married or more happily divorced. Still, I know, as I pull at a blade of grass with blood-stained fingers, that weddings back then, they weren't like this. Weddings now are fall events, time to coincide with hunting season, the ceremonies always coming after the butchering, when our bodies ache from a week of bloodletting and the fattened deer have been rendered into chunks for smoking and strips for drying. This is my fourth wedding in a month. I'm worn out. My boots are in shreds, and I'm dead tired of eyes dimming, hoarse last breaths, and the terrified cries of late-born orphaned young. Still, I accepted the offer. In the cold of winter, we will need the meat. A woman's voice breaks into song, and tired heads lift over bowed shoulders, eyes opening out of respect and hope. Hope that the ceremony will be brief. Hope that the wedding roasts will cook quickly. Hope that there will be time to fill our bellies before the sun dips beyond the inescapable curtain of mist that rises just off our lonely shores, trapping us all. I try to listen, but here, closest to the meat, it is impossible. Between the enthusiastic fly-swatting squeals and shouts of the girls and the ever-present hum of an insect army on its own justifiable hunt, few words reach my ears. Maggot watch is the best job, reserved for children 9 and younger. When you're 10, they give you a bucket and send you to carry guts. Still, no one complains. We all need the meat. But today, there is another distraction. I blush, unable to look toward the battle raging just a few feet away. The rumor mill got it right for a change. The girl, young woman, my mother had corrected, is as new can be when you live on an island 7,000 strong and dwindling. It has been only 2 years, 4 months, and 7 days since the change. That dreadful morning that you never quite forget, when the mists came and we lost track of the world, or it lost track of us. And already, people are talking, worrying. There aren't enough babies, they say. The first one comes early, a family friend had once said, referring to quickie marriages when quickie dates led to quickie consequences. I look up at the rounded belly of the bride as she passes. No one hides pregnancy now. Who would, when a woman with child gets twice the rations of a man? Hunting has become the norm. We hunt for deer. We hunt for edible greens. We hunt for berries and mushrooms and anything else you can put in your belly. And as nature has long dictated, we hunt for a mate. My mind turns to the new girl, rich with inevitable possibility. Hot-cheeked, I duck my head, flinging thoughts away. The line of suitors will be long for this one, with many far richer than I in land, extended family, and resources. She is close enough to touch and entirely unreachable. My head jerks up as tired applause startles the birds out of the apple trees and a hand clamps down on my sunburned shoulder. Care to spell a couple of the maggot watchers? The voice of my mother's chiropractor is gruff. He's been sickish of late, but the look in his eye is sharp and kind. I shrug, pretend nonchalance at the prospect of working with the girl who ran away from God's Island, the religious enclave that took over the south end of Vashon. He smiles, not fooled, but gracious enough to pretend that he is. Do you know her name? I swallow hard as bodies rise around me. The wedding is over. Did the groom kiss the bride? Who knows? Fewer care as they turn to tasks generated by 3 days of orchestrated slaughter. Avoiding his gaze, I shake my head, learning the definition of tongue-tied firsthand. Neither do I, he says. But she reminds me of a girl my daughter used to babysit. So find out for me, won't you? Sure, I agree, turning resolutely toward the hanging racks, a sudden question coming to mind. What have the last 2 years, 4 months, and 7 days on the south end been like for her? This is an original work, copyrighted by March Twisdale. Any rebroadcast, retransmission, or transcriptions of this piece is expressly forbidden without the written permission of the author, but we hope you enjoyed it. And that's our show, folks. You've been listening to Prose, Poetry, and Purpose on KVSH 101.9 FM. This is March Twisdale, program host and producer. Thank you for tuning in as my authors share how they hope to inspire positive change in our world, one reader at a time. And now, I'm happy to close with a song from our island's own Allison Shirk titled Monster. One more example of activism through art. Broken dishes.